a lot of this information from the Preserving Bible Times, Doug Greenwald down there in Gaithersburg, Maryland, who I've gotten information from in the past and used as a resource for understanding the context. That's what he specializes in, their group specializes in. They specialize in teaching the context of the Scripture. So some of the times when I've given sermons on parables and other things having to do with the New Testament, I have gotten some of that information from Preserving Bible Time, some of it from some of the resources that they use. This particular message and the information I got from Doug has to do with an orphanage of sorts, kind of, in India. And a certain organization approached him and asked for some information that they could teach in their orphanage there on what it was like to be a child, to be a young person in the day of Jesus. So that's where I got a lot of the information. Then I had to look up the pictures and do some more research. But that's what gave me the idea and got me started. So got to give credit to Doug. That's the organization of this message follows the way he put it together. Now, what was it like to be a young person, to be a child? Are we on here? I'm not on. What was it like to be a child in the day of Jesus? Do you ever think about that? Do you ever think about it? Do you think it was different, or do you think it's the same as now? What do you think? Different. Why do you think it's different? Give me some things that are different that you know right off the top of your head. Go ahead. They wore different clothes. Yeah. Yeah, no televisions or computers. Yes. You have to what? Sorry. Oh, more work. Yeah. Oh, we're going to talk about that. Yes. Very good. Anything else? You don't have to do work now?
Not as much as they did.
You're right. Okay, not as much as they did. I'm sure you're right. I'm sure you're right. That's a good answer. Good answer. Yes. They respected their elders. Of course, you all respect your elders, so that's not a difference for you, but a lot of people don't respect their elders. Okay, what are these here? What do you see on this screen? But you don't have to raise your hand. Just go ahead. What are all those things?
Names.
They're names. In the time that Jesus lived, and in the times that the Bible was written, names were very, very important. Don't even you see your name up there? They're not, all the names aren't there. I think there's a few. You see your last name. Okay, that works. Anybody other? I thought it might be some other names up there. Do you know that names have meaning? Did you know that? Does anybody know what their name means? What's your name mean?
Little warrior.
Little warrior, okay. Ryan means little warrior.
Little
or little king.
Little warrior.
Yours is little warrior. Oh, yours is little king. Okay. That sounds like it sets up for some conflict in the house, right? We have the little warrior and we have the little king, and they might not be on the same side. Anybody else know what your name means? I'm sorry?
He is so.
He is so. Okay.
Pure.
Yes. You know what your name means? It means just what it says. Just. Right. Being justice. Leah, you know what your name means? Your parents, especially, they know what it means. Weary. Okay. Weary is the most popular one. Are you weary, or do you just make people weary? Or you know, I'm just kidding. Who else we got here? Nathan, you know what your name means? You know? Means beloved of God, right? Is that what it is? Or given by God. Given by God. Okay, sorry. Did we get everybody? Somebody's got their hand up. That's the way some of the Bible commentaries say it. I don't know what your last name means. What does it mean? Anybody know? Yeah. What does Charles mean? Anybody know the meaning of Charles?
Man.
Man. Okay. Anyway, names have a meaning. But when we name, anybody know what my name means? No, you don't know what my name means. It means strong. Do I look strong? I'm not really strong. My parents, when I was born, they didn't know if I was going to be strong or not. They just gave me the name Brian because they liked Brian. And maybe your parents didn't know whether you were going to be a little king or you were going to be a little warrior or you're going to be pure. They just, we like, in America, we kind of give names most of the time because we just like the name and we think it sounds good. But in the time that Jesus lived and in the time of the Bible, names were very, very important because actually they meant something, and you would name your child sometimes something that you wanted them to be or wanted them to be like. Okay? You wanted to like given of God. That would be a type of a name, you know, from the Bible. John means God is gracious. There are other names that have meanings. Now, when Jesus was born, his parents were told what to name him. And they didn't really name him Jesus. You know why? Because they didn't speak Greek. They named him something else. Anybody know what his name was? If you saw him in the alley, what would you call him? Because most of them didn't speak Greek. They spoke Aramaic or Hebrew. So do you know what his name was in Hebrew or Aramaic? It was like Jehoshua or maybe Yeshua, something like that. It wasn't Jesus. And his name has a meaning. Anybody know what Jesus' name means? What's Jesus' name mean? Adults.
Savior.
Anybody in the Old Testament have that name? I know you know. Who had a name like Yehoshua in the Old Testament? Does that sound familiar? Joshua. Joshua's name means Savior. And Jesus got the same name, or a very similar name. Sounds just like it. Did Jesus live up to his name? He became our Savior. So his name became the true thing. So names are very important. These names here are important. Jesus' name is very important. But in Jesus' time, it meant something, what your name was. And if you named somebody Brian, you expected them to be strong. That's the way it was back then. And Jesus, of course, was going to be our Savior. He was born to be our Savior. Now, how about maybe where you lived? And I didn't know what order to take this in. I'm going to take it in the same order that Doug did, but let's talk about where you live. Most of us, let's see, all of you live in a village, right? You live in a little town. What's it called? You have all houses around. What's it called where you live?
Neighborhood.
A neighborhood, but does that neighborhood have a name? What do you call your neighborhood? Does it have a name? Brunerville, maybe, yeah. Well, you live in a town or a neighborhood? Who? Okay. And you live out in the country. You live near Duncan. Neighborhoods were different in Israel. Okay? They were different. I want to talk about this picture in a minute. But did anybody see anything wrong with this picture? What's wrong with this picture? Any young people? A donkey and a cow. Is that a problem? Right. And the Old Testament tells us what? Don't be unequally, don't yoke an ox with an ass or something like that. Don't yoke different kinds of animals together. So this is a picture showing somebody that I guess that's all they had and that's what they did, but it doesn't work too well. It doesn't work too well. But one thing that was very, very different in Jesus' time was that different from where we live and how we are is the people were very, very poor. They did not have all the things that we have. They had hardly anything that we have. Most people were very poor, dirt poor, like we say. They worked on farms. And guess what? The farms didn't belong to them. Most of the land in Israel, in the time, in Judea, let's say, when Jesus was on earth, most of the land was owned by the king, Herod. So if you were this person, and you had maybe you didn't have that, maybe you had two ox, which would be better, right? And you had to plow. You were plowing land that wasn't yours. You were working for somebody else. You didn't even own the ox. You didn't own the seed. You didn't own anything. But you had to work, and you had to work hard, like Leah said. And you were working for somebody else, because you didn't own the land. According to Doug's research, just for sharing some statistics here, 90%, he says 90% of the people were poor, very poor. And of the other 10%, about 7% were tradespeople, merchants, you know, some kind of professionals that had a job like that. And the other 3% roughly were the elite, people that had money, the rich people, the 1%, like the Occupy Wall Street people were calling them. Only it was 3% in Judea. Of course, the rich people didn't live like we do. But most people were very, very poor. Now, when you think about it, what was Jesus' family? What did his... Now, his father is God in heaven, but his father on earth, his mother's husband, what did he do? What did Joseph do? Anybody know? What did he do? Was he a farmer? No. What did he do? Nobody knows? What did he do? Carpenter. What's that mean? But, and you read it, but it says carpenter, but it doesn't mean that they use wood to build houses like we do now. We the term carpenter in the King James Bible, it probably, this is the opinion of many scholars, and it's certainly my opinion, most things were in Judea were built of stone and clay and so forth. So Joseph was the kind of person that built buildings, all right? We call them carpenters today because we build, you know, I do, that's what I do. I work with new houses, I build new houses. But in Judea, when Jesus was on earth, they built them out of stone and brick and rock and things like that. So if you were a carpenter, let's call them, if you were a home builder, you had to work with rock. So that's what, he had a trade. So maybe Jesus' family was a little bit better off than the average family because Joseph had a trade. Joseph knew how to do something and he was good at it and he could go and use that and make money for himself, not have to work for Herod on Herod's plantations or work for somebody else. Most people, though, had to work for somebody else, like these people here. They don't own, this is a modern picture, obviously, they don't own that vineyard. They don't own those grapes. They're picking them for somebody else. And that's what happened in where Jesus lived. If you worked in a vineyard, it most likely was not your vineyard, because if you were rich enough to own the vineyard, you didn't work. You remember the story of Ruth and Boaz, right? Boaz was he owned the land. He was rich. He wasn't out there picking barley. He had people picking the barley, right? And Ruth went and asked if she could do some gleaning. But he wasn't out there. He says, "My men will take care of you. My pickers will take care of you." Because he had people working for him out there. He wasn't out there working. He was one of the elite. Let's see if there's anything else I want to say about farms real quick here. Doug points out that when Jesus said, "Blessed are they that are poor," that the people he was saying that to understood what he meant, because they were pretty much all poor. You know, the Sadducees, the people that were connected with the temple, they were part of the elite. They had money. There were people that had money, but not very many, not very many. Most people lived in very, very poor circumstances, and we'll talk about some of those circumstances in just a minute. If you didn't own land and you worked for somebody else, what kind of jobs could you have working for somebody else on their land? You could pick grapes. You think of anything else you might do? Plowing fields? Absolutely. We just saw, wait a minute, right here. Plowing fields? What else? Pick corn? Yes, got to pick corn. You know, they've had other things to pick. They didn't have corn like we have. They didn't have corn like we have corn. They had barley and wheat and other things. And what else? I'm sorry. And peel. Well, they didn't have maize. They didn't have that kind of. But they had to get the wheat, the barley. They had to winnow it. They had to get rid of the outsides of it and so forth. Yes. Taking care of the animals. Yes, that's another thing they had to do. They had all these jobs to do, but they had to work for somebody else to do that because they didn't own the animals. Maybe they had a couple. Maybe they had a couple of sheep. Or maybe if they were blessed a little bit, they had a couple of goats, because goats were better for some reasons. I'll talk about it in a minute. They may have had a couple animals, but they didn't have the big animals for the plowing. When my wife and I have a charity, a ministry, and we're helping somebody build an orphanage in Burma, okay? And you know what he needed to build an orphanage? He needed to build a big building? You think, well, he needs boards and he needs roof. And you know what he wanted first? An oxen. He needed a cow. He needed something to go up into the hills to get the logs so he could build something. It's like having a tractor in In Burma, this is, even today, this is like having a tractor. In Jesus' time, this was the tractor. All right? This is the tractor. This is what pulls the plow. This is what hauls things. This is what does the work on the farm. Oxen, just like that. And that's what you did. You took care of the animals. You picked the crops like you're talking. You worked for other people on the land. Maybe they let you have a few acres and said, all right, if you get 2 bushels of wheat, we're going to take 1.5 and we'll leave you a little bit and you can have that for your own. It's called sharecropping. My wife's grandfather was a sharecropper. That means he lived on other people's land. The other people let him farm it and he had to give them a portion of the crop, a large portion of the crop. That's called sharecropping. Many of the people in Jesus' neighborhood there, around Nazareth, that's what they did. They were sharecroppers. They didn't own the land, they just had to work it. They were poor people. By the way, just for everybody here, this was Jesus' audience. You know, when Jesus was out there teaching the multitudes, they were the poor people. It wasn't the scribes and Pharisees. They came. You know, they came and spied on him and tried to find out what he was saying and took issue with him. But it was the poor people, and the poor people liked Jesus. And they liked his message because it gave them hope in a kingdom where they would prosper and they would be blessed. And they wouldn't be working for the Herods and the, you know, those kind of people. Now, according to his research, he says that if you had a little farm area and you had six people to feed, it took 5 people working in the fields in order to feed 6 people. In other words, and that sounds complicated, what it means is, how many people in your family? It means all of you would have to be out in the field working in order to have enough food. And you're exactly right when you said you had to work hard. Even the children had to be out there working once they got big enough to do some work. Because if you didn't work, you didn't eat. You had to work on the farm to eat. It was tough. It was tough. But they were happy. Now, see, I lost track of the slides here. If you were doing okay, you might have some sheep. You might have a couple of sheep. You didn't have a whole big herd, but you might have 2 or 3 or 4. And you could take care of them. And what can you get from a sheep if you have a sheep or even a goat? Milk. What else? Actually, the milk from goats is better. Use their hides. After you kill it to eat it, or you kill one to eat it, and then they have their skin, right? And you make leather out of it, and you can make a, what? You can make a baseball glove. No, they didn't have baseball, but what did they do? You're exactly right. I wouldn't call it a blanket, they made something to lay on the, put on the floor that then they would lay on, and that would be their bed. Yeah, you could call it a mattress maybe, but it wouldn't be very comfortable, would it? But it'd be better than sleeping right on the dirt floor. You got one of their hides. Anybody ever seen a sheep hide or any kind of a skin? I've seen, who has one? Ray and Sandy, don't they have one in their house? You've got one? You've got one. So, you know, it looks kind of comfortable compared to just lying on the floor. So, and yeah, you've got the meat, you've got the milk. Goat milk is better. It's got more butter fat in. So if you were more blessed, you might have goats. Also, goats can live pretty much anywhere. They don't care if they're on rocks or whatever. Yes?
You would have the wool, too.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. Thank you. I forgot. I was thinking that, and then the thing didn't come up, and I forgot. You don't have to kill them to get to use it. You give them a haircut, right? And then you make sweaters. You can make a... They didn't have sweaters. They make some kind of a cloak, some kind of a covering. You could have a couple of goats, too. But if you had a lot of goats like this guy, they weren't yours. Because if you were rich enough to have that many sheep or goats, you weren't out there herding them. Somebody else was. And guess who people didn't like in Judea? You might not know this, but there's jokes about used car salesmen. They're not popular in the United States, whatever, for whatever reason. Make fun of used car salesmen. In Judea, they made fun of shepherds. The shepherds were the low life because they had to work for somebody else. And they were probably stealing. You know, what they would do is they'd steal a sheep and they'd sell it to somebody and then they'd tell the owner, oh, this wolf came and killed the sheep. I'm so sorry. That's what they thought that's what the shepherds all did. So they literally looked down on them. They weren't very popular people. look down on the shepherds. But the shepherds work for somebody else. And that's what Jesus talks about, that, the benefit of everybody here. Jesus talks about the shepherds that work for somebody else. The sheep aren't theirs and they don't care about them in John 10. And that's why they were looked down on. And well, go ahead. Okay, so you might say what I'm ready to say. Go ahead. Ah, most eaten meat in the world is goat. I didn't know that. You go down to the Caribbean, that's what you're going to have goat soup all the time. I'm sure the rest of the... But goats can live almost anywhere. That's the thing. They can live in hostile conditions, and the meat apparently is very nourishing. When God's Son was born on earth, Jesus was born, who found out about it first? Besides mother and father and people that were right there. Who got the announcement? Shepherds. The shepherds. It's amazing. God told the shepherds. The shepherds were the people that everybody else looked down on. Look, oh, those shepherds. Who cares about them? God told them first. That's interesting. I don't know. I can't tell you what that means. It shows that God cares for everybody, even the shepherds. This is a picture of a village. It's not a village near where Jesus lived at all. This is in England. And the reason I wanted to show this picture, notice what you have all this farmland, see that? And you have farmland here too, which you can't see in the picture. And then, where do the people live? They all live in a village, all close together. That's the way it was in Judea. That's the way it still is in some areas. When I went to France, you had lots of farmland, the people lived in a village. Now, why do you think that is? Any ideas? Why would you live in a village? Why wouldn't you just build a house out here in the middle of that field? Or maybe so somebody else works there. But, you know, back then they didn't have electricity. So, you know, whatever conveniences you have from living here, you might not have out there. Yes, go ahead, Leah.
Maybe it belonged to someone else.
Yeah, it could belong to somebody else.
It could
have been. Does everybody hear that? She's got a very good point here. It's probably better to live in a village because things will be closer than if you lived out here in your own little plot of land out there. You'd have to walk all the way to here to get to your market. And by the time you got back, whatever you bought would be, if it was cold, then it'd be warm or whatever. Yes, you had something, Andrew? Okay. So there are a lot of reasons why they lived in villages, but that's what they did. They lived in villages, and everything was nice and convenient for them, and they farmed the land around the villages. That's typically the way it was. And in the villages, now this shows individual houses. This is not exactly what the houses were like in Judea. Not at all. And I have this is a better idea of what the houses were like in some of the villages in Judea. They were right on top of each other. They were made out of stone. You don't see any wood there, do you? Stone. All these stone. I don't know where this is or what town it is. I'm sorry. But you see, now, if you live in this house right here, you had a roof. They're standing on the roof, right? How many windows does this have? One. And one door, right? Do you think it was very bright in there? Probably pretty dark and yucky, huh? You got more than one window in your house? We all have more than one window in our house. They didn't. They typically had one. Now, how about in the back? Do you think they had a window there? Why? Yeah, because it's right up against the next house. And so on. They're next to each other. It's like row houses that we have now. Now, why did they do this? Well, there are a lot of reasons why villages did this. Protection from enemies. They could all be band together. You could protect yourself, maybe fight if you had to. Protection from wild animals. Wild animals wouldn't come into the village. They'd stay out in the country. Yes?
Instead of house with stone,
uh-huh.
It's kind of made of stone, except
sometimes not. Yeah, we have stone houses. Yes, we do.
And vampires
new house. Okay. So we do have stone houses. We definitely do. But we still, today, we're going to have more windows than just one. Usually. The houses are right on top of each other. The houses have roofs you can walk on. The houses typically have one window and one door. Now, are they big? Well, you can't really tell from this picture. I'll skip down. Let's look at that one. Each one of these is a different house. See? There's a house. There's a house. There's a house. We'll talk about it in a little while. I don't want to talk about it yet. But we'll talk about how big those houses are. Let's see. If you lived in this village, guess who your neighbors were? You think your neighbors were somebody you didn't know? Probably your cousins. Like, you live close to some of your cousins up there. You live close to some of yours. But in this village right here, probably each house is, they're related. They all know each other, and they're all relatives. And then they have to, you know, maybe they work together when they go out in the farmland. You can't see it, but there'd be farmland out here somewhere. And they go out and work in the farmland, or go out and work in their trade, or whatever. But they live right around all of their relatives. Now think about this. If your grandmother lives next door, and your uncle lives back here, and your aunt lives over here, and your cousin lives here, and your other grandmother lives over here, are you going
to...
Okay. Are you going to be able to get into much trouble? What are you going to be able to do that people aren't going to see? You got relatives all over the place. And you're going to behave yourself if you're a young person in Jesus' time. Because everybody around there knows everybody else's business, and most of them are related anyway. And the young people were pretty good. And if they weren't, the whole town knew about it and told your parents. And then you'd know about it, wouldn't you? That's the way it was, small town. It's still like that in some small towns, but it was especially like that in Judea. Now, where do you think you got to go? Here in America, we want to go see Niagara Falls, we drive to Niagara Falls. We want to go to the feast, we drive to the feast. We want to take a trip, we take a trip to the beach. If you lived in this village, where do you think you went as a young person?
Nowhere.
Why? Why do you think they went nowhere? Okay, very poor. No place to go. Not only if you were a child did you not go anywhere, but the adults didn't go anywhere, typically. Now, there's an exception to that. We'll talk about it in a minute. But they didn't have anywhere to go. Who got to go somewhere? If you were a shepherd, you got to go wherever your sheep went. You got to take them out into the fields, right? Out into the hills. Now, if your father was a shepherd, what kind of a job do you think you would have? Carpenter? Leather tanner? No, you're going to be a shepherd. That's kind of the way it was. You did whatever your dad did, if you're a guy. If you're a woman, if you're a girl, you grew up and you became somebody's wife, and you tended to the household, but your husband would probably be doing whatever his father did. That's the way it was. So we read in the Gospels that Jesus was, they said, well, you're the carpenter's son. You're the house builder's son. And they don't have to say it, but we know what that means. That means that he was a house builder too. Because that's all you did. You did what your dad did. You didn't say, I don't think I want to be a carpenter. I think I'm going to move to another town and do something else. Because how are you going to move to another town? You don't have any money. Who's going to take care of you? Unless you've got a relative in another town, maybe. Maybe you can go with Uncle Joseph and you can do something with him, possibly. But most of the time, you're going to do just what your dad does. Huh? An extra what?
An Uncle Jed,
if you had an Uncle Jed. I don't know if they had any Uncle Jeds. Of course, if you had a real Uncle Jed like in the TV, then you'd have plenty of money, wouldn't you? excuse me. Lost my paper here. Lost my page here. Here we go. That's what I'm on. All right. There was one special time they got to go somewhere. When do you think that was?
Feast.
And where did they go for the feast? Jekyll? Where? At the time of Jesus, where did they go?
Somewhere nearby.
It could be nearby. Where did they go?
Maybe another town.
Maybe another town. Depends on where they live. What town did they go to? What was the big city? Did anybody know what the big city was in the area where Jesus lived? He lived in a little town called Nazareth. What was the big city? Anybody know? It was called Jerusalem. And in Jerusalem was a temple. And in that temple was where people went to keep the feasts, all the different feasts. Now here's a picture, you've seen this one before, from the Temple Institute. So there you have the temple, right? And there you got the big bridge going over, or one of these, or the bridge going to Jerusalem. And this is on the Temple Mount. And people would travel for a long way. If you live where Jesus lived, he didn't live in Judea where Jerusalem was. He grew up in Nazareth, which was up north, up in the hills. They kind of called them hillbillies. They talked different. They had a little twang in their voice or something. And they lived up in Nazareth. And they had to get on the road. Actually, the road didn't come straight to Jerusalem. They had to get on the road and go toward Capernaum and then come back around and come down all the way to Jerusalem. So it was a long walk or ride if you had an animal you could ride on. And people would come from all over, from Galilee. The state, you might call it, or the province where Jesus lived was called Galilee. Jerusalem is in the one called Judea. So there were Jews up in Galilee. They had to go all the way down to Jerusalem for the feast. And they'd get in a big group of people and they'd go. It might have looked a little bit like this. A little caravan, right? Only they're all headed for Jerusalem. Now, if you were a Jew, these were Jewish people that lived. Jesus was a Jew. The rabbis, their preachers, their ministers, told them that the women couldn't travel with the men. They had to travel separately. So if you had a big group like this, the women would be off by themselves and the men would be by themselves. You wouldn't necessarily talk to each other because, this isn't in the Bible that I'm aware of, but they said that a man should not travel with another man's wife. You could travel with your own wife if you were going on a trip, but I couldn't travel with another man's wife. So if I wanted to go on a trip with Mr. Mike and Miss Darlene and my wife, my wife and Darlene would have to stay together, and Mike and I would have to stay together, because I shouldn't be with another woman. That's the way they had their rules, okay? That's not a Bible rule. That was just the way they did things back then. Now, can anybody think of a situation in the New Testament that explains? Right.
His mother thought he was with his father, and his father thought he was with his mother.
Hear that? That makes perfect sense. I never knew this before, that in a large caravan you had to travel separately. The men and women traveled separately. The children traveled with the mothers up until they were considered adults. When was a Jewish child considered an adult? 13. 12, 13. You get, how old are you? You're 12. So, you know, around 12, 13 is when you started to be considered an adult in Jewish society. So Jesus was 12, and probably, we don't know this, probably dad thought he was with mom, because that's where he always was. He always came back with mom. And mom figured, he's 12 now, he's in the temple talking to the adults, he's probably with dad. And it wasn't until they went a whole day and then got together for the evening in their family groups, I thought you had Jesus. Oh, you know. That's not fun. One time, Shelby played that trick on me. See, Travis was going somewhere, and we left church without him. And she acted like I'd forgotten him, which I had. I mean, I figured she knew what was going on, and she acted like she didn't. And go, oh. Well. Anyway, maybe that's why. Maybe Jesus. They each thought they were with each other, and it wasn't until at nighttime that the families got back together and they would sleep together in their groups of family. And then when they started walking again or riding their animals, then they had to separate again. So that may be what happened. But they had a long trip to Jerusalem, and that was a fun trip. They saved up money, they saved up animals and all that, because they were going to have, I'll say it now because I might forget it later, they were going to have something at the feast that they didn't have the whole rest of the year very much. Any idea what that might be? There could be several things. What do you think maybe they had at the feast that they didn't have the rest of the year very much? What did they take to the feast? Every tenth calf, every tenth sheep, every tenth. They took animals. What did they do with those animals when they got there? They killed them so they could eat them. They had sacrifices and they had food. And they had meat at the feast, and they didn't have much meat the rest of the year. They didn't have much meat the rest of the year, but the feast was very special. Steak, right? steak. They look forward to that. The young people and the older people look forward to that. Okay, give me a minute here to get caught up with my notes. This just happens to be, this group, interestingly enough, is called Worldwide Church of God. They're out of Korea, but they're all over the world. But notice that they went to Jerusalem, and I don't know if they were interacting with Muslims or whatever, but notice that when they were in their sessions, they're in their sessions separated, men and women. So even today, in some cultures, the men and women need to be separated for certain things. Okay, here we got a house. Or we got several houses. We got a row of houses. We got one there, one there, one there, one there. So you can't have a window between this house and this house, can you? Because they're right next to each other. The windows are right out here. The windows and the houses are around a courtyard. There's a courtyard. There's probably another one maybe over here. There are different places where there's a little central area where you can come out of your door and maybe talk to the neighbors. These houses averaged about 15 feet by 15 feet. So let's mark out a house. Come on up. Everybody stand up here. We're going to mark out a house. Somebody stand in this corner. All right. Let's see. Let's go 15 feet. All right. Right here. Stand here. Let's go 15 feet. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Somebody stand here. And Leah, follow me. You can stand right here. Right there. All right, now. We got Nathan, come on, Justin and Ryan. We're going to be in the house. Now, is this, anybody live in a house this small? We don't have houses this small, not normally. I mean, I walk here, there's a wall. I walk here, there's a wall. If Justin goes that way, there's a wall. There's a wall everywhere. And there's a door and a window. One, there's a door, and we're going to have a window maybe on this side. Very small. Very small house, 15 by 15. That's when they dig them up, like right here, when they dig these up, because they're still there, that's about how big they are, just this big. And you might have 3 children, 4 children, 5 children, and they all live there. Everybody lives there. Yes?
My friend, Emma, she has 7 kids.
Well, what if they had to live in a house this big? That might be pretty crowded, huh? Might be pretty crowded. Let's see what I got here now. Okay, here's a... Katie, you can move just a little bit so we can see the... That's good. Here's an artist's conception of what the houses were like. Yeah, you can move. You don't have to stay in that corner if you want to see. We have a 2-story house. Now, I've talked about this before. What is in the basement?
Animals.
Especially in southern Palestine, from what I've read. And upstairs is your 15 by 15, one room house. I didn't say that. This is all one room. But you could have something at one side, one end, maybe over here. That would be, let's see, we have Ryan and Nathan, if you don't mind coming here. You stay right there. So maybe in this 15 by 15 room, at one end, you've got something that's called the guest quarters. And if you have people that are coming into town, you can put up some kind of a little tiny curtain or something, and that can be their private room on the other side of the curtain. That's their private room. Everybody else got to be here. The animals are downstairs. What good are the animals downstairs? What do they do for you? Like, what if it's getting cold? The animals give you some warmth. They're breathing, right? They're making some, sweating or whatever, so it makes you a little bit of warmth. Also makes a little bit of what else if they're downstairs? What do you think? If you had animals in your basement, what do you think you would have besides some warmth?
You have to clean up after.
Yeah, so what might you have if you had to clean up? A little bit of smell, maybe? Okay, you go get your seats. This isn't a very big house, is it? Maybe you got a little smell downstairs. Now, according to Greenwald, and I didn't know this, see if I got the picture. Yeah, there we go. You can't put goats and sheep both in the house at the same time, because the sheep have sensitive noses, and the goats don't take care of themselves very well. They're pretty dirty, and so they smell, and so the sheep don't like being in enclosed quarters with the goats. I didn't know that. I'm not sure what happened in this picture. I just want to show a sheep and a goat in the same picture. Huh? Oh, yeah. That looks kind of scary. I don't know how they staged that. But anyway, you don't put sheep and goats both in the basement. I say basement. It's not really a basement. You might be dug into the ground a little bit. And that could be your day. They call it a daytime. Here it says daytime living quarters. This is from Bible Study Magazine, which is a Logos entity. These are just pillars holding up the roofs and floors. It's not a wall. Very, very small. What would this be? That's a sleeping roll. That's that skin, that sheepskin we were talking about, that maybe, you know, when you finally killed one of your sheep, maybe you even took it to the feast to kill it, but you're going to bring its skin back so you got something to lay on for your bed. Yes? Well, I don't know. I guess until you get something to sleep on, you might sleep on the floor. I don't know the answer to that. But you didn't throw anything away. You didn't throw the hide away. You used it. So maybe you had more. Maybe you had two of them to sleep on, it would be a little more comfortable. I don't know. Very, very small house, and very people are poor. Yes? Would the baby go in the private room? That's a good question, and I don't know. From what I read, it was just a guest quarters. Now, you read that Mary, when Jesus was born, that they put him in, the King James says, in a manger. And you put him where the animals were. And we think, oh, that means he's in the barn. No, it's not a barn. In fact, it says that right here, right? Not a barn. The animals were downstairs. So maybe there was no room upstairs. Why? Because when was Jesus born? What time of year? Around? We know. You know? It was around the Feast of Tabernacles. Absolutely. So, if it was Feast of Tabernacles time in Bethlehem, you had a lot of people coming down because Bethlehem is really close to Jerusalem. So they were coming down for the feast. So they had a lot of guests. So the guests at this end, at the other end of the room, that little private, it's not really private, you just put a little curtain, that was already used up with all the other relatives that were there. So when Jesus and Mary came, you're going to have to be downstairs with the animals. It's part of the house. It's just the place where the animals normally are. That's what I think. It could also mean upstairs, like right at the top of there. It could mean that too. But it means where the animal. It usually means where the animals are. So it probably means they had to stay downstairs. That's all. Because they didn't count very much, for several reasons, which I've gone over before. Okay. Now, there's another thing about this house that's important, and that is right here. What is this? The roof. Now, why might the roof be important? Let's look. Here's a picture of what it looked like, perhaps. It's not a real picture. In Capernaum. Now, these days we can go to Capernaum, if you wanted to go to Capernaum, and you could see something like this. You could see where the synagogue was, and you could see the foundations of some of the buildings. So by seeing those kind of things, then they put together what they think it may have looked like. Capernaum is a place where Peter lived. It's a place where Jesus taught. He called Matthew, the tax collector there, and he would teach. And this is the Sea of Galilee. So Jesus sometimes taught on the shore of the Sea of Galilee near Capernaum. So each of these houses made out of stone had a roof. The roof was not made of stone. What do you think the roof was made of? Or go ahead and say what you want to say.
What I was going to say is, like, they use the top of the roof for, like, see how they put, like, this kind of blanket on top?
Right, right.
They use it as, like, shade so they can sit up there.
Absolutely. You're ahead of me. Good. What do you... Go ahead. It's similar, yeah, and actually that's true. It's similar to what a sukkah would be. The sukkah that you have for the Feast of Tabernacles, you have these different twigs, except here they're big twigs. They're big logs, or, you know, at least big enough to hold they put straw and thatch on top of that. Remember in England, you ever heard the name Thatcher? Somebody's last name, Margaret Thatcher, means somewhere way back in her ancestors was somebody who made roofs out of straw. Yes. Okay. So you, what is the problem maybe with a house like this in the summer?
Gets too hot.
Gets too hot. And in the evening, especially near the water, it would cool down, wouldn't it? So where would you want to go in the evening? Outside. And that's a really good picture. I didn't get this picture because of that, but here it is. You can be, actually you could be, because they got that little awning, you could be there during the day and be in the shade. But even not, you could be on the roof. And you know what? Not only could you go up there just to get cool, you could sleep up there. Yes? Well, I'm saying log. They didn't have to. I'm talking about logs.
Oh.
They'd be thick enough to walk on, like a 2x4. You put the logs, and then they would put some kind of a thatch or, you know, smaller twigs, some smaller thing. And eventually, they'd actually put mud. They would tip it. Typically, by the time you're done putting everything that was on there, grass could grow on it. So it actually was pretty stable.
I was just going to say, I thought I read somewhere where it could be clay, too.
Yeah. You mix it in, and eventually it's enough stuff there, and it's strong enough that actually it's like walking on a lawn a little bit. It's very strong. No, it's not like a sukkah. It's not little twigs, but it's the same principle, just bigger stuff. Yeah, yeah. Because the roof was not something you couldn't destroy if you wanted to. You know, lower down through the roof. David, remember he saw Bathsheba, right? Where did he sit? He was up on the roof. Why does he go up on the roof? Because it's cool. Or maybe because he was a peeping Tom. I don't know. But he went on the roof. So the roof is an important part of these buildings. And you can't see them in the ruins, but you see them. We can imagine what they were like. I'll read his description of how the roofs were made of crisscross tree stems. So that makes it stronger. Crisscross tree stems, woven palm leaves and mats, which are covered with mud, straw, and dirt, often with grass growing on top. And at the back of your house will be a stairway providing access to the roof. So there you go. You see the stairway right there. And sometimes it's just too warm in the house for sleeping, so you could go out there. Okay, let's see, where are we now? Oh, if you lived in one of these houses, very, very small, right? The only piece of furniture, you didn't see, well, we didn't show, but you look here in this picture, where's the furniture? There's no furniture. They did show somebody's weaving something, so it had a loom. This person actually has a loom and they're doing some weaving. But there's no chairs, there's no tables, there's no nothing. If you did have any furniture at all, you'd have one piece of furniture probably, and that would be a table. And notice how they are at the table. What do you notice? Something different? They're sitting on pillows, and the table is very low. That's how they did it. They didn't sit at a chair that had a table. Could be. When I was in Thailand, we went to a traditional Thai banquet, and we had to sit on the ground at a table that was just like that. They didn't give us pillows, though. Do we have pillows? We did have pillows. I don't remember. Okay. We had pillows. Just like that. And they put the food on the table, and they didn't serve. It was like food you'd share, and you kind of had to lean. I found it very uncomfortable. I wasn't used to it, but huh? Yeah, eat with your fingers. That's another thing. So not only did they not have furniture, but there's a lot of other things they didn't have. Go ahead. They it's both. It depends. But doing cooking inside is like having indoor plumbing. It's a luxury. But yeah, they cook outside. And we're going to talk about that a little bit in a minute. Yeah, you didn't cook inside. Why? Because you didn't have a place to cook. You didn't have a stove. You had to cook with a fire. So if you had a place that looked like this and you had a fire inside your house, where's the smoke going to go? So you typically were cooked outside or in the courtyard. Like maybe you and several of your neighbors had a little courtyard, a little open space there, and you all cooked there. Maybe you would share meals even. Now, they ate like this. Did they have, what do you think they ate with?
Fingers?
Do you think they had forks?
No.
Spoons?
No.
Maybe bowls. They didn't have wooden things?
They could have had wooden things.
Oh, they could have, but not much. They had typically clay pottery.
But
I wanted to say one other thing, by the way. I want to talk about food, but let's go back here just to one quick thing. There's also, where are the closets? There are no closets. Why don't they have closets? No coat hangers. Why else? They didn't have a second set of clothes. You don't need a closet unless you got more than one set of clothes. So when you took a bath, your clothes took a bath, especially if you were a kid. Probably took your clothes off. You get in the boat, you get in there, wash you, then put the clothes in there and wash the clothes. You put them on black wet, now you just probably stay naked for a while, and then your clothes dry off. So maybe at night, whenever, I don't know how when they did it, but the point is you get a bath and your clothes would get a bath all at the same time. You didn't need a closet because there's nothing to put in the closet.
And then maybe they would take a bath and their mom and dad would be
washing their clothes while they're taking a bath. Could be. Absolutely. So I wanted to mention that before we get on to the meals too much. Okay, so we sit in a place like this to eat, and we don't have any forks, we don't have any knives, and Dalton says, well, we're going to eat with our hands. And maybe we do. Well, definitely we do. But how do we eat with our hands? Because it could be that you've got something like that to eat. Now, how would you eat that with your hands? Two fingers together. Okay, kind of like we use chopsticks. Could. You could. But there's another way. We'll talk about it in a minute. First of all, before you ate, there's a prayer. In Jewish life, the time of Jesus, there was a prayer for everything and a prayer at every time. Prayer before you went out to work in the field, prayer before you ate, prayer before you did everything. So the Father would pray.
And a prayer before you went to bed.
Pray all the time. Okay, yeah, and that's good. They had prayers for everything they did in life, they had a prayer for. You can ask Mr. Mike about that because he's got books that have some of these prayers in them. Yes?
Pray before you wake up.
Now, you might be right there. You'd probably be tough to do that. How could you pray before you wake up? If you pray before you went to bed, that's before you wake up too, isn't it? But he's going to tell you that you prayed before you got out of bed, didn't you? You prayed before you got out of bed.
And you prayed when you went to bed.
Yes. You could, but there's another way they did it. I'll show you. Okay, so you prayed. You always prayed. And the other thing you had to do is you had to wash your hand or your hands. Yes?
Mm-hmm.
You got it. Okay. That's where we're going to get there. She's ahead of me. She figured it out. All right. But before you do that, you have to wash. And so they had jars like this. This one's squished a little bit in order to get it in the slide. It's actually a little bit taller than that. But that would be full of water, or size of water, and you would dip your hand, maybe not your hands, dip at least your right hand in there. In some cultures in the Middle East, still to this day, and in the Far East, the right hand is your clean hand. Okay? Your right hand is the hand you keep clean. You shake hands with somebody, you get a clean hand, or you embrace somebody, you embrace him with your clean hand. The other hand, and I won't tell you what you do with this other hand, but the other hand is not considered clean because some things you do with it are not clean. You can ask your parents about that. And so this hand was not considered clean. This one is considered clean. So when you went to eat, even if this hand was already clean, you still poured some water on it and did it and cleaned it. And you washed your hands. For the Jews, this was very important. And they were always picking on Jesus and his disciples. Well, it didn't say Jesus. They were actually picking on his disciples for not washing their hands properly. And it's not because their hands were dirty. It's just because they got into a whole big complicated way of doing it. You had to do everything in the right order, and you had to do it up to the elbow, and you had to, you know, there were a lot of rules about it, and Jesus' disciples didn't do all those rules, and so they got criticized for it. Yes? Well, no, you still had to do it because it was like a ceremony. Even if your hand was already clean, you still had to pour some water on it because they just always did that before they eat. Maybe to make it cleaner, but more so because it was a ritual. It's what you call a ritual or a ceremony. It's something that they felt they had to do, and they had to do it for what they had their reasons. I don't know. They had reasons that they thought they would be extra clean. So they just made sure you did it, even if you were clean. That way they know they're clean, I guess. Okay. So you get clean. You've prayed. You've cleaned. You need something to eat with. And as somebody already pointed out, I think it's Darlene, one of the things that they ate at every single meal, you see the women making here. What are they making?
Bread.
Made bread. And you had bread at every single meal. And the women would make it together. I mean, it's a real picture of, I think, women doing it. They would go out probably in that courtyard area and make it together. Why, if you're going to make a lot of, you're going to make it, it's as much trouble. You might as well make 2, 3, 4 loaves while you're at it instead of just making one. So they'd get together and all the women in the courtyard would make it, and they'd make as much bread as they needed for a day or two or three or whatever it was they did. And the reason you needed bread at every meal, oh, by the way, and Mr. Hugh has talked about this before, what did they make their bread out of? Do you know? What's our bread that we eat? What is that usually made from? Wheat. If they were rich, they had wheat bread. But most of them were very poor. So what kind of bread did they have?
Barley
bread. Absolutely. They had barley bread. They were poor. Barley bread is what most people had. And what did you use that bread for? Katie pointed it out already. You would break that bread into strips or pieces, and you would take that piece and dip it into whatever it is you're eating, and then you could eat that. So you used your bread as kind of a spoon or fork. Or ladle, or whatever you want to call it. Yes?
I like if you're like a little kid that's only like 2 or 3 years and
dip them in
and eat.
Would you? I don't know if they let them do that or not. Maybe they taught them how to use the bread. Maybe they taught them how to use the bread. Because there's a problem. If you kept using your hand, what if you dipped your hand in there and you put your hand in your mouth, then is your hand still clean?
They could use the other hand.
Oh, no, you never use that one. You only use this one. But your hand's not clean anymore. So you're going to have to go wash and do all that again. You're not allowed. The rabbis were very strict about putting your hand back in. They had signs like that. Everybody know what that is? What does that say? What does that mean? You know what that means? What does double dipping mean? And go back in, yeah, okay. Rabbi said, no, can't do that. Can't do that because it's not clean. It's going to your mouth, then you're contaminated, you put it back in the food, you can't do that. That's not allowed. No double dipping. It's just like having tacos and sauce, or whatever, the chips and salsa. Can't put it back in after you took a bite. So, the women had to make lots of bread. Why did they have to make lots of bread? Because every bite was a new piece of bread. So you had to have a lot of bread. Every bite's a new piece of bread. So if you want to eat that, it might take, a good bit of bread. Or maybe you don't eat too much of it, a bunch of you. You're eating out of the same bowl. So new piece of bread every time. It's kind of, you go to a salad bar, and it says new plate every time, right? It says use a new plate when you go in a restaurant that has a salad bar. Well, that's the way it was here. New piece of bread every time. No double dipping. That was an important rule. Oh, you see that? Okay. Wipe.
So when Lazarus wanted to eat the crumbs that fell from the rich man's table, it was the bread that he used to wipe his fingers and his face off.
Oh, okay. Okay. Everybody hear that? It's like a sponge, kind of, or a napkin. So bread was very important, and they had to have lots of it. And you had to have it for every bite, because there was no double dipping. I don't know how to say that in Hebrew or Aramaic, but they didn't really have a sign that said no double dipping. They just all understood that you did not do that. Did not use your left hand. You did not dip your right hand in there more. You didn't dip your hand in there. You just dipped the bread. And every piece of bread, one time, then it went in your mouth. You ate it. New piece of bread. Dip again. Remember when Judas was going to betray Jesus. Judas was going to point out to the Pharisees, to the temple police, who Jesus was. And he was ready to go. And they were all having the meal together. And Jesus said to John, I guess it was, because they say, who's going to betray you? And Jesus said, it's the one to whom I pass the sop. Isn't that what it was, pass the sop? So what he was saying, the one that I am going to give this to. They passed the bowl around, and Judas had a piece of bread. He's ready to, he needs to have the bowl again. So they passed it to him so he could do his bread. And that's how, and then Jesus said, well, what you have to do it quickly. Do it right away. But that was the sop. This stuff is what they're calling the sop. It's whatever, we call it soup. Whatever the soup is, whatever the It's usually going to have a lot more liquid in it than this. This has got a lot of veggies going on. And probably not much meat, if any. It's just a vegetable puree. Had a lot of that when I was in Thailand. They would make it. They didn't call it sop. They didn't call it soup. I don't know what they called it, but it would. And they didn't give us bread to eat it with. We just ate it with a spoon. But you ate stuff like like a sop all the time. They didn't have bread. Everything's rice. You put it on top of rice over there. But it's the same principle. Spread it every meal. Barley bread for most people. Okay, a few more things to cover. If you were a young person in the time of Jesus, there were a lot of stories about your ancestors that you had to hear about. You had to hear about Abraham. You had to hear about Isaac. You had to hear about Jacob. You had to hear about Moses. You had to hear about David. You had to hear about Ezra and Nehemiah. And you had to hear the story of Esther. And you had to hear the story of Ruth. You had to hear all these things. So it was very important for the father in the family to sit down with the children and to teach them all about the history of the people of Israel. And they heard it from the time they were babies, the time they were born. They heard these stories. It's a very oral tradition. We have a Bible, and it's got the stories about what Jesus did and what he said. The reason that was able to be written is because in Jesus' time, people sat around and talked about it and said, oh, I remember when Jesus said this. Or I heard my friend Joseph over here, he saw Jesus and he said, Jesus said this. And so they could tell the story. And finally, it was written down for the benefit of people like us who weren't there or people that lived in other parts of the world. And now we have the Gospels to talk about Jesus. But at first, it was just people sitting down and talking about it. And that's the way all these stories were passed down. From generation to generation, by people talking about it, and not only talking about it in the home, but if you were especially a young boy in Jesus' time, guess what you had to do when you were about 3, 4, 5—I don't know exactly what year—you had to go to school, synagogue school, and there you're going to have the rabbis teach you all about the things in the book that we call the Bible that they had, which we call the Old Testament, the Hebrew Bible. They had to learn about that. They had to learn to speak Hebrew. They probably spoke Aramaic, but had to learn to at least read and understand Hebrew. Huh? Some of them. I mean, they had to read certain things. Was everybody literate? Not necessarily. I don't know. I can't answer that question. Not everybody could read. But they could teach. I'm sure they could read things like the Shema, like the Lord our God is one. So these type, and Him only shall you serve, and things like that. There were certain things that the boys all had to learn. And there were scrolls in the synagogue. They had a scroll of the Torah, of the law, and certain people read that. So some people knew how to read. Did everybody know how to read? No. Maybe not everybody went to synagogue school either.
What happens? Does the girl go to synagogue
school? I don't think so. Does anybody know the answer to that? The girls didn't go then. They do now these days, but then they didn't go. Their mothers taught them how to do the things that they had to do at home, and they didn't have to go and learn the things that the boys did. And it was part of the culture, too, that when you were grown up, that, yes, the mother would stay home, and she would do most of all that work that needed to be done around the house and raising the children. And the father, he had a job, too, but after he was done his job, then he would spend time talking with the other men in the village about the law. They would always talk about the law, talk about the Torah, God's law. So you'd learn it in the synagogue. You'd learn the stories of your history. You'd learn what kind of a person to be. And again, I'm taking Doug's word for this here. He says that there was no me in the village. It was a we. It wasn't about you. It wasn't about me. We had to think of how something affected the entire village. And you wouldn't do anything to make the village look bad. And you had to be hospitable, meaning if somebody was coming from out of town, you would have to, I say, well, can you stay with us? Even though they're only going to stay in that little corner of your house way down there, you had to offer that. Because that was, you know, remember when the angels showed up for Abraham before God destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah? Abraham said, please stop here. Stay with me tonight. When the angels stopped to see Lot, please stay here. That's the way it was in the Middle East, and that's the way it still is. You have to stay. Please stay here. And then once they stayed here, you had to run around and get some food for them. And when you got food, what did you have to give them? Bread, right? Whole loaf of bread. A fresh loaf, not just what you had left over from your meal. Fresh, full loaf. And it was considered an insult if you didn't offer them this hospitality. And there's a parable, just to put it in a little buzz in your brain here. The parable about the person knocking at the door at midnight, that's a parable that said that the explanation to that has to do with Middle Eastern hospitality. That there's no way that that person on the inside of that, you know, having their door knocked on, there's no way that person's going to let that person, the traveler down. Because it would be an insult to the whole village if they did not go and fetch the food, get the bread, whatever that person needed. And it wasn't out of the question that they'd be traveling at midnight, because in summertime it's very, very hot, so you do your traveling in the evening and early morning anyway. So it's not about me. It's about the whole village. It's about being hospitable. Another thing that's very important in Jesus' time is that if I invite you to my house, you've got to invite me to your house. If I give you a gift, you've got to give me a gift. That's just the way it was. And it would be offensive if you didn't do that. We're not necessarily that way in America, but that's the way it was there. And to some extent still is. You had to, it's called being reciprocal. You had to give back whatever somebody gave to you. Now you'd say you didn't have to. Think about Abraham buying the caves for Sarah, his wife. When, you know, read the negotiation between Abraham and the guy, I forget his name now. Read that negotiation. He's saying, Abraham's saying, I want to pay you for this. The guy's saying, oh, what's between you and me? You don't owe me anything. Let's take it. You know, you need it for your family. Oh, no, I can't. I wouldn't think of it. But it's just part of the style. From the very beginning, Abraham was going to have to pay for it. And from the very beginning, the guy, I forget his name now, he had a price. But they would do this dance to find out, you know, to get to the end of it. It wasn't, it's just the way it was. It's all these, this formality of how you reciprocated and you answered each other. Okay. Almost done. If I can find my, I didn't number my pages, so I have. All right, synagogue school. I did talk about synagogue school. And you'll be taught the oral tradition there. And that's, you know, that's an example there. If you were, I've already talked about this, but I just want to wrap it up. If you were a boy, you're going to learn to do what your father did. That's probably, for most everybody, that's what you're going to do. If your father's a carpenter, a house builder, you're going to be a house builder. Your father's a shepherd, you're going to be a shepherd. If your father is a tanner, you're going to be a tanner. If your father, whatever he does, if he's a farmer, you're going to be a farmer. If he has a vineyard, you're going to tend to vineyards. Do they have what? Bankers? They had people that had money. Now, I don't know that they had a bank, but, you know, the Jesus said don't charge usury, or no, actually, the Old Testament says don't charge usury, don't charge interest to somebody who needs money. So there were people that had money that were able to lend it. Was it actually a bank the way we have banks in modern times? No, they didn't have banks then. I don't know when that started, probably with the Medici's in Venice or whatever, in the Middle Ages. There were groups that started having, you know, where they had people that just controlled money. It's a good question. If you're a woman, or if you're a girl, you're going to learn to cook. You're going to learn to make bread. You're going to learn to raise children. You're going to learn to make clothes out of cloth, out of the threads and cloth. You're going to learn those things. That's what they learned then. And they didn't learn the same thing the boys did because they had a different role and they didn't have to do the same things. Yes?
And you'd probably have to learn how to get a baby out.
Learn how to get a baby out. That kind of happens without learning it, but I'm sure you got to see it. That's a good point. You had to learn how to have babies. Because we can't do that. Men can't do that. Only women can do that. So, okay. So, I hope that just sharing this stuff, it shows that, what, like we said in the very beginning, the world, when Jesus was a little guy, was very, very different. His village was very, very different. His life was very different from ours. And every kid had a life very different from what we have. And the world was very, very different then. We've talked about a lot of ways it's different. People were poor. You know, they didn't eat the kind of stuff we eat. They don't have the things that we have. But they had very strong families, very strong commitment to each other. They lived close to each other in families. They shared everything. And you know, if you wanted to be bad, trust me, somebody was going to find out because your relatives are all over the place. You can't get away with anything. They're going to tell your parents. So that's the way it was. It was a very close-knit community. And this is talking about normal villages. Jerusalem was a big town, maybe more like a Harrisburg or something, you know, similar, maybe a little smaller than that, but it was a bigger city. But most of the towns were small cities, small places like Duncan or whatever. But it was still very, very different. The houses were right on top of each other, very, very small. People lived in very, very poor and meager circumstances, but they were happy. They knew their role. If you ever get a chance to watch Fiddler on the Roof, if you've never watched that, watch it. I almost was going to show you a clip from that, but I didn't. But in the very beginning of that play or that movie, it talks about that everybody knows their role. In Jesus' world, everybody knew who they were and what they were supposed to do. And it's very different. We have a very different culture now where if you want to grow up and you want to be a firefighter, you can be a firefighter. If you want to be a carpenter, you can be a carpenter. If you want to work on computers, you work on computers. We have a lot of freedom to do all kinds of things. They didn't have that in Jesus' time. It wasn't an open door where you could just do whatever you wanted. Most likely, you were going to do whatever it was your father did.
And if you want to be a teacher, you can be a teacher.
Right, you can be a teacher. Right.
But then to be a mom and a teacher.
Yeah, there you go. But you can choose those things. So we have a lot of blessings to be able to choose. Back then, they didn't get to choose. But you know what? Life still was okay. And people still lived. And people it was just a different way. It's not better or worse. It's just different. Yes. No, there wouldn't be any female teachers, and at this time, you wouldn't even have girls going to school. Their mothers would teach them, or maybe their aunts or their grandmother, or you know, people in the community. They would teach them what they needed to know, because you didn't have the learning like we have now about the sciences and the math and that type of thing. You didn't have those kind of learnings. And when they went to synagogue school, they weren't learning science and math so much. They were learning about the history of Israel. Okay, that they were learning about their traditions that made them God's people, a special people. And that was very, very important that they knew that and understood that.
So their only subject was history.
In a way, it was their only subject was history, God's law. That's pretty true. I mean, they had to learn other things. But if you needed to learn how to be a shepherd or a carpenter, you learned that from your father. You went to the synagogue school to learn other things. Okay, any questions? Any other questions? Thank you for coming up, and that'll be it.